You're listening to my daddy's show.
Welcome, Cardinals fans, to Conversations with C70. Please welcome your host, Daniel Shoptaw. Click and play, familiar tone, Shoptaw speaks, here on my headphones, yeah, he plays it calm, but that man is funky, yeah, but what can I say? I'm a C70 junkie. Yeah, he'll take you on the team with the blogging scene. Talk the moves of the Cardinals and what they mean. He always has a real cool guest. He'll talk the Redbirds for all the rest. He's got his awesome kids to lead it off. And now he's got this sweet theme song. A blogging, tweeting baseball man. Just sit back and listen, you'll become a fan. I'm a C70 junkie, a C70. I'm a C70 junkie, a C70. I'm a C70 junkie, a C70. And now your host, Daniel Shoptaw.
You are listening to my day show. Go Cardinals.
Welcome into what is becoming a annual midseason tradition. It's our All-Star Roundtable as we bring in podcasters and bloggers from around Cardinal Nation to talk about the state of the Cardinals, which is usually better than it is this year, but we're going to do this anyway. Instead of you listening to me, I'm Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70, and instead of listening to me, I'm just going to let them go around the table and tell them who they are, where they're from, all that fun stuff. Kevin, since you're probably the one that's caused us all the problems tonight, why don't you start? You start us off, and I guess we'll let the Holly and Laura and then Tara and then and Alan. So kick us off, Kevin.
Oh, the number of times I've heard that, Kevin, since you're the one that's caused us all the problems tonight. Well, I'm probably the blogger known as the guy who always has to say I have this odd letter in the middle of my name, because on Twitter, I'm Deck of Cards. That's an A in the middle of Deck and Cards. And my blog is stlcardsandstuff.com. And that's an N in between STL Cards and Stuff. So I've been blogging for more than a decade now, probably around 13 years, and podcasting and all that good stuff down here in Southwest Missouri.
All right. And we are sisters Laura and Holly. We are the Card Gals, STL Card Gals, and we've been podcasting for almost 3 years now, have about 150 episodes, so we really enjoy just kind of giving our take on each series game by game and talking fan perspective. Not a lot of stats, but we throw them in there when we can.
So that's stlcardgals.com.
And I'm Tara Wellman, probably minimally familiar to most of you who listen to Daniel Shoptaw's shows, the plethora of them. I tend to make appearances fairly regularly, for better or for worse. But I am at Tara Wellman on Twitter. I like to keep it simple, mostly so I don't forget it. And then I write occasionally, although not as much as some people would like, at the Cards Conclave, not mentioning any names. And you can find me there at the Bird Tales tab. And more often and much more regularly, I can be found on YouTube with the Bird Seeds show, which is basically a video podcast that I attempt to put out every Monday. I've been pretty good about it this season. Past seasons, not so much, but every Monday a new show comes out, and we're just depends on what the Cardinals give me to talk about that week, what comes out on those shows. But it's a good time, and I'm always taking Twitter questions or comments or topic suggestions, so feel free to share.
Can I just say for a minute that I think next time we do something like this, we should get all the other bloggers involved with bingo cards for things that they can bingo along the way. And the first item on that bingo card would have to be whoever drops the word plethora first.
So what you're saying is I win, yeah. Right?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You're a winner, Tara.
Terry, like I said, Tara's on most of my shows because she hasn't figured out how to change her phone number yet. So, Alan, before we get too far along, finish us up.
All right, I'm the newest on the block. I'm Alan Medlock. I've only been doing this since about December, but I think I got the invite because I was bothering everybody's Twitter threads the whole time. So I think that's how they got to know me. You can read my stuff at redbirddaily.com and follow me on Twitter at amedlock1.
Yes, and for those listening, this does take the place of both Meet Me at Mutual, which Alan and I do, and Gateway to Baseball Heaven, which Tara and I do. We won't be doing those shows this week. We'll be doing this one instead. Now, we have a lot to talk about, and we'll see how quickly we can get through them, because we really want to talk about the Cardinals and their first half and what may be coming up. Tara, we'll start with you this time. This has not been a good first half. I think everybody can attest to that. If you were to point a finger, what is the worst part of this first half for you?
You know, it's so hard. I was trying to pinpoint something earlier, and it's so hard because there are so many specific things that have been so bad. And I'm sure that everyone will pick on a different one tonight. But honestly, all of the technical things, all of the fundamental things that are problems seem to me to be almost a symptom of some deeper issues. And I'm sure we'll get into what some of those issues are. But I think for me, the most frustrating part of the first half has been almost this feeling of apathy, just that it is what it is. And you know, we don't want to get too crazy to try to fix it. To some degree, I get that as a business side of the game, but I also understand that just from a fan's perspective and from people who watch baseball to see good baseball, it's been really hard to swallow, not just that this is a pretty bad team, but that there doesn't seem to be a large emphasis on doing anything to fix it.
Holly and Laura, I know y'all tend to try to come at this as a positive angle, which has been taxing for you this year. But if you had to, if you had to point at what has bothered you the most, what has it been?
I think for me, I would go with something that's probably pretty obvious, but the bullpen has really bothered me this season. And I didn't calculate today's loss into this figure, but they've lost 36% of our total losses this season. And I guess that wasn't as huge of a number as it felt like it's been so far, but that's still a pretty good chunk. And I can't compare that to past seasons because I don't have those numbers with me. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, it's just we've had so many disappointments with almost every single guy in the bullpen, not least of which is our guy who was basically our closer last season, And I just don't know how to get past that unless we fix something. So I would say that's definitely been my biggest disappointment so far.
And for me, I have to say it's the lack of defined roles. There's been so much experimentation, so much jiggling around that my head has been spinning this season. I can only imagine how the players' heads have been spinning. And it's almost like there's been so much moving around that nobody's been able to sink their teeth into their role and really get it figured out. And, I mean, this is their job. And you can imagine if your job description at work changed every single week or maybe even every couple days, you just could never get yourself grounded. And I think that I've seen a lot of that this year.
Alan, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree on all those. And it's the complacency with it has been the word that I would have come up with. What bothers me is I know we had this 4 to 6 week window that Mazalek had talked about improving. Does he really need that? This has been the same since basically second half of 15, to where they just didn't play well. You know, going to Chicago, they were the lesser team in the division series. And then last year, they were just seemed lifeless half the time to finish a game out. I understand that the division's still winnable, but tonight's just a culmination of everything going bad. And they haven't hit on all cylinders at any point this season, and it really didn't feel like they did it last year either. So I don't know what the end game will be, but it's disappointing all the way around.
Kevin, you got something?
Yeah, I think it's just – it's not Cardinals baseball. I mean, I think what we're all saying here is, you know, every time somebody says something like that, you hear phrases like the Cardinal way and all of that, and everybody kind of rolls their eyes, and I get it. But I think, to be specific for a second, what we're used to seeing with Cardinals baseball is not just crisp play, but we're used to seeing a team that cares, a team – and I know they care about what's happening – but I think they've gotten used to the idea that, look, we're just getting beat down. We're getting beat up night in and night out. And what's happening from the front office on down, it seems like from the outside, is there's not a lack of urgency. And I think that's what's defined the Cardinals baseball for years, is that lack of urgency to win. You know, DeWitt is always fond of telling us every year we go to Blogger Day that the club is very aware that their attendance is what makes them contenders. When fans come in at more than 3 million fans every year, and they can count on that, they can plan for it, they can financially plan for it, then that allows them to spend really well above, to use a term of the time, well above slot for where they are in the marketplace. I mean, we are not a high market area for baseball, but the club is able to spend that way because of the attendance. And the attendance is that way because they know the Cardinals are always going to have a sense of urgency and try to put a contender on the field. We haven't seen that since spring training this year. We haven't seen – yeah, we've seen things where the team will come in off a road trip and Mozeliak will meet them on the tarmac and say, you know, look, this is what we're going to change. This is what we're going to do. We're going to bench this guy. We're going to move this guy. But it just seems like there's a lot of times when fans are sitting here saying, look, I understand it takes two to tango. You can't just start making trades right now. Even if you wanted to, because you've got a lot of trade partners that you want to trade with that aren't ready to move those pieces right now. But there are other situations where you've got three guys in the rotation. In Waino was a lot better last time out, but you know I wrote about that probably is because he's pitching at home. But you got three guys that could potentially be replaced in the rotation right now in Lynn, Waka, and Waino, and we've got at least two guys in Weaver and Flaherty that could get the job done. So there's just not a sense of urgency with this Cardinals team, and it's maddening when you're a fan watching it going, please get something done and get it done right now.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess for me, and it probably encompasses all of what y'all have said, it's the regularity. Like you said, it's that feeling that you go into a night, and even if they get up a couple of runs, you feel like they're going to blow it. If they get down by three or four, you know that you don't feel like they're going to come back. You know, it's kind of like that idea of how are we going to lose tonight? And that's not a mindset that as Cardinal fans we've dealt with pretty much for a long period of time. I think we had some of that last year with the bullpen, but, you know, that kind of straightened itself out a little bit. It's just that it's kind of mind-numbing having to go through this and say, you know, hey, we're not playing the Phillies tonight, so we're not going to win. And that seems to be the pattern so far. While we are going to stay on this theme, let's narrow it down. Holly and Laura, which player has been the disappointment for you, the biggest disappointment?
Well, I had put down one name originally, and then I talked to Laura about what her choice was, and then I kind of agreed to go with that. So now we'll... Well, actually, I'll let you keep the one you had, and I'll go with my second choice, which is Grichuk, just because for the past couple seasons now, I've really thought it's his time to shine. He was going to get the playing time that he needed to. The talent is certainly there, but time after time, it seems to come up short, and that's disappointing. It's especially personal for me just because we gave up so much to have him in my mind. I mean, whatever. of David Freese. That's like was huge. And my one consolation was Borges and Grichuk. And Borges was a huge disappointment. And now Grichuk is also right now proving to be the same. So that would be mine.
And I went with O, and I love that guy. I think last season, it was just amazing to watch him. He was the stone Buddha, but I think that this season, and these were stats as of yesterday, so he does have the 16 saves, which I think is a little misleading with his four losses, and his ERA is 3.71. But those numbers are misleading to me because when you see him out there, it's almost like watching Rosie from a couple of years ago, and your heart stops a couple times because he gets those guys on that he wouldn't necessarily have done last season. So I think instead of scaring the opposition in the ninth inning, the other team, I don't know if they have a book on him now and they just know his stuff a lot better, but he's not scaring them anymore. So that's been disappointing to me. And I know it's probably even more challenging because he still doesn't know English very well. There's that language barrier, and it's a different team than it was last year, so he's still trying to adjust in his own way. But it's still been disappointing to me.
Yeah, we talk about O getting traded, and we may talk about that later on. I don't think everybody has fully realized that means Eugene goes as well.
That can't happen until he's on birdseed.
I don't want to get anybody too terribly depressed, but that's something to consider when we start talking about that. Alan, where are you going to go? Which players bummed you out the most?
And yeah, I'm way down on Piscotty. I really thought he'd take the next step this year, and I think that he's been one of their worst players. He's hit a little bit after the leave of absence, but overall, I think he's taken a step back at the plate, definitely. And I don't think he's a very good right fielder either. I think he's misplaced out there. I think he needs to play left. But overall, I just feel like last night, most of the time on that play, when he gets doubled up, you give a pass to anybody else. But with him, you just can't anymore. You know, I understand that was a good play, but the base running is so atrocious that they just need to go station to station, and it always seems like it lands on him. So he's just been a disappointment to me, mainly because I thought if he cleaned up this year, he would drive in 100 runs. I thought they were really lined up with the on-base percentage with the perceived top three guys. They'd be really good. Obviously, that's not his fault because those guys haven't gotten on base either. But I just think he's taken a step back as a player. I don't know if it was the contract or what, but I've been really down on him all year.
Well, Tara would agree with you on his base running. I know that. We've had that discussion.
It's embarrassing. That's the one thing. It never changes. I know all of us are have agreed on this. That's the one thing that is just astounding to me, that it's still just awful nightly. They run into and out on the bases every night. I mean, tonight it was kind of a weird deal with DeJong at second, but it's still every night. They run into and out. It's unbelievable.
It is surprising. Kevin, is there somebody else, or have you got one of the same names?
Oh, I got somebody else. Absolutely.
He was so fired up.
I've been chomping at the bit. I'm like, don't take mine. I I'll say this just to kind of springboard off the previous two. You know, the disappointment with O is the guy's allowed a run to score in four of his last six appearances, and almost nobody's talking about it. I mean, you have a closer that you're rolling out there with a team that cannot afford to drop wins in the ninth inning, and he's letting runners score like he's one of the worst relievers on the team. And that can't continue. And then with Piscotty, I got to tell you, Alan, I'm giving Piscotty a pass for the entire year for two reasons. One, a stupid decision he made, and one, something that was completely out of his control. And the first one is his mother's ALS. After that diagnosis, his head is not going to be in it. It's not going to be in it all season. And really, Piscotty is an intellectual player. I think we've seen enough flashes of talent still there this year that I don't think we have to worry. But I do think it's just going to be a pass on him this season. But the other thing is, if there's one axiom in baseball, it's you don't fix what's not broken. The guy started messing with his swing in the offseason. I get that he wants to preemptively make some changes for a problem that might come up in the future, but he screwed up. And the biggest issue there was when he made swing changes beforehand, he had the minor league season to work those out. This year, I don't know that he fully anticipated the difficulties of basically this lab experiment of a swing during a major league season for a team that desperately needed his bat. So I think for those two reasons, I'm going to give him a pass for the entire year as far as a player. But for me, the most disappointing guy is Matt Carpenter. Carpenter is the guy that's supposed to be your feature hitter. He's supposed to be your leader. I don't care if he hits first, ninth, fourth, third. He's your feature hitter. He's the guy the entire lineup. You know, La Russa used to talk about there were a few guys that he would put down on the lineup card, and then he would fill in the rest of the blanks. Matt Carpenter is the first guy. Wherever he's hitting determines the rest of the lineup. And he has not been the guy that he needs to be. And not only that, he's been bad defensively. He's made base running mistakes like crazy. I have not seen a fan base, just to talk about that side for a second, I haven't seen a fan base go a full 180 on a player like they have Matt Carpenter this year. Now, I'm not completely there, but I'm not where I was last year on Matt Carpenter. And for me, he's the most disappointing player, not only in how he's not performed this season, but also in how he's responded to that lack of performance. And I'm really concerned about him and his future with the Cardinals.
It's pretty telling, I think, that tells you exactly what kind of season this is, that so far nobody has repeated a name. Tara, what do you think?
Well, I was just going to say, take Carlos Martinez and probably Tommy Pham out of it and just pick a name out of a hat at this point. I don't think anyone's having a great year other than those two guys. Everyone that was just mentioned was on my list. I'm honestly surprised that it took that long to get to Matt Carpenter. It's obvious that you didn't ask Twitter this question because I don't know that you would have gotten past Matt Carpenter at that point. And, you know, I think there are a lot of ways that you can go with it. I think I don't know that I really expected a stellar year from Adam Wainwright. But as just on a personal level, as a longtime fan of Adam Wainwright, it's been really hard to watch what's really a second season of what seems to be the decline of Adam Wainwright. But I'm going to kind of flip the script a little bit and do something that's probably totally predictable. And this is really the only way I can work it in there. So my biggest disappointment this season has been that Colton Wong, in what has been the strongest start to a season in probably his career, has been hurt so much. Because I think that what we saw out of this team when Colton Wong was hitting the way that he was a little bit more of a spark, a little bit more of what Tommy Pham has been bringing, but in whatever part of the lineup he was slotted into. And it was brought up earlier that there is such a lack of clarity in the roles with this team. I think Colton may have handled that as well as I've ever seen anyone, because he hit everywhere from eighth to leadoff, and he just continued to do his thing. After being so concerned about him in the off season and the flare up that there seemed to be between him and Mike Matheny, I've been so impressed with the way that he's handled things. And, it's no secret that I'm a pretty big Colton Wong fan. So for me, it's been very disappointing to see him kind of get to that point where he was maybe establishing himself and getting the confidence and the respect from the organization that he's been looking for, to then be sidelined by multiple injuries without a real clear timetable of when he'll be back to that level.
Yeah, that is true, and it'll be very interesting to see how he responds. I mean, he did well enough coming back from the first time. Hopefully he will do the same coming back again. I will probably pick up on what Tara was saying, though, because I think Adam Wainwright is probably my guy, just because, again, nobody expected. We had this discussion all offseason, and nobody expected Cy Young Adam Wainwright, but we expected him to make an improvement on last year. We did not expect an ERA that got close to six. And some very, very ugly outings. Like Kevin has written, he pitches his pitch much better at home, and we talk about maybe why that is. I don't know. But, this was the idea was that Adam Wainwright was going to, rebound to somewhat similar form, and the offense would get better, and this team would start winning some ball games. And that really hasn't happened. I guess the other disappointment, of course, is the loss of Alex Reyes in spring training, which none of us really wanted to think about. And I don't know that would have made a key difference in the season, especially after you know, John Mozeliak told us this, you know, a couple weekends ago that he would have been in the bullpen. It would have helped, but, you know, I don't think you could rely on Alex Reyes.
Not right now, he wouldn't.
Well, yeah, now, now I would hope not. But then again, given the decision-making, as you said, Kevin, of this organization this year, I think everybody would be clamoring for Reyes to be in the bullpen, in the rotation.
Think about how heavy the comment he made about Waka, how heavy that weighs right now.
Yeah.
You know, you're wondering, okay, you're going to have to tell him eventually. Is that what we're dragging out?
Yeah. That is an interesting discussion. And I think that, you know, Michael Walker's name did not come up in this discussion mainly because the expectations were so low for him from last year.
Sure.
But they were expecting him to be an actual major league starter, and that being going five innings, and so far that's not been the case. Alan, let's transition here. We'll let you kick off. Let's go off of this first one. I want to start while we're in the midst of all the negative stuff. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about and Holly and Laura kind of referenced that they don't really. I mean, their last show. They're not. This is, may not be their favorite question, but what do you think the clubhouse atmosphere is like? Because, you know, we've seen Matt Adams go to Atlanta and kind of, at least from our perspective, looks like he got a breath of fresh air and started hitting. You know, we heard some comments out of Tommy Pham once Johnny Peralta was gone, talking about, you know, all the different clubs that the team has. There seems to be not as much maybe on the outside, but it still doesn't feel like it's a completely cohesive clubhouse that we've thought we've seen in the past, does it?
No, not at all. And I think the Tommy Pham interview brought that to light about, you know, you and I have talked about this a lot. Of the three things that he pointed out, you know, what was it, chess club, video game club, and ping pong club? Mm-hmm. I read a deal that said Jerko was the best at those three very same things. And I understand that it was probably a Peralta deal. It was. It said the exact same things. I'm sure it's probably he was a Peralta guy, and Jerko won the job. Not everybody may see it that way. So I think there's cracks in there somewhere. It's funny, I read a deal last year, and it was a quote from Colton Wong and one of the other outfielders, I think may have been Grichik. And it's not that they said anything bad about Pham, but they did. They were kind of bad-mouthing him about how he wouldn't allow Wong to wear his outfield glove to whenever they were putting him in left field and center field last year. And they said it kind of lightheartedly, but it just seems to me that he is probably pretty outspoken about that kind of thing. And I think now when we see what he said about the, you know, in not necessarily in regards to Jerko, but in regards to Peralta, and then we get Gould was on 590 this week and made the comment like, hey, it's a different clubhouse with him in it. You just kind of wonder how stiff everybody else is.
Yeah, Kevin, I mean, what do you think? I mean, and if there is some problems, where do they lie?
You know, I don't know that. I think the problems of the clubhouse being stiff, maybe. I get what you're saying, Alan. I think maybe it might have actually turned into something different this year. I think the problems of the clubhouse being stiff are kind of last year's problem. I think what you're looking at probably this year, and you look at what Tommy Pham has brought personality-wise, and you look at his comments, I think what it almost sounds like is a clubhouse who, I don't want to say it took winning for granted, but has begun to see winning as almost a side effect of other things that they do, as opposed to an urgent goal. I mean, you see Tommy Pham play on the field, and it's very clear that winning the ball game is the most important thing to that man every time he shows up to the park. But I think when you talk about things like the ping pong club or the chess club or the whatever, and you start mixing that in with things like this is what we're doing with team chemistry and this is what we're doing with the clubhouse culture and all of that, it almost becomes similar to the idea that the primary goal is that these guys get along and they play nice together and they have this great clubhouse atmosphere, and out of that will come winning, as opposed to, look, guys, the first thing we're doing here today is we're winning at all costs. And then if we have a doubleheader or we have a rain delay, then we're going to play some ping pong, we're going to play some chess, you know, whatever. But it almost seems like a distracted clubhouse. And now that they're not winning, you don't see personality out of guys like Dexter Fowler, who was brought in to bring personality to the clubhouse, because it's almost a clubhouse that's awkward with each other, because their primary goal, if you listen to guys like Tommy Pham, almost sounds like, hey, let's get together, let's hang out, let's be a family, let's have fun, and out of that is going to come winning, instead of their primary goal being winning, and then they fill in the gaps with this other stuff. So I think what you're probably seeing, just from the outside looking in, is a clubhouse that lost their way. And I think that's where a lot of people end up coming down on Mike Matheny for allowing that to happen. How does a clubhouse led by Mike Matheny lose their way and not have that urgency to win above all else, and then everything else being secondary, third, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, Tara, this is, I mean, leader of men type of stuff, which is the, you know, the label that's going to be on Mike Matheny forever and always, I think. I mean, does it boil down to just, you know, some leadership issues?
I think that there's certainly reason to point a finger in that direction, but I think these are grown adults. I mean, they're not children that need to be told to play nice. I think that there's a lot that can be said about maybe a clubhouse reflecting the personality of its manager, and not just in you know, whether or not they like to have fun, but in how they take on the responsibility of their job. I think that we see some of that, but I want to echo what has already been said, in that I think that there's a severe lack of intensity, and that's what we're seeing from Tommy Pham. That's what I sort of referenced about Colton Wong, in the way that they play, in just this way that every play matters, every at bat matters, every opportunity you have to take an extra base matters. We don't see that from most of these guys, and it's frustrating, because, to get back to what Kevin was saying, that's what we think of when we think of Cardinals baseball, is just this team unit that's intently focused on doing all of the little things, because all of those little things matter. So I think that's one thing, that there's this lack of intensity. But I want to kind of go a different direction than what Kevin was saying as far as the guys in the clubhouse, because, you know, it was interesting earlier, I believe it was Kevin, mentioned that, you know, of course these guys care about the results. We know that they do, but it doesn't always show up on the field. And I was thinking, more often than not, winning teams, you see that, yes, they care about the results, but they care about each other more. I know no one wants to reference it, but if you look at the Cubs from last season, part of what made them such a special team was the fact that those guys were so close. And not just because they played ping pong together during rain delays. You know, they were genuinely, they wanted to win for the guy next to them. I don't see that with this team. And it's so hard for me to make assumptions about how people are getting along from a distance. But yeah, it's really difficult to see or to hear the comments from Matt Adams that I don't think were directed at the Cardinals in any way, but it's hard not to read between the lines a little bit. And to hear the comments from Tommy Pham, who's been kind of on the outside looking in for so much of his career, I can imagine him coming into this season, having lost his major league job in spring training, and coming into this clubhouse and thinking, I've been working every day of my life to get here, and you guys are taking it for granted? Because that's what it feels like from the outside looking in. So as much as they seem like a clubhouse full of nice guys, I'm not sure I buy into the idea that they really care about the guy next to them as much as they want everyone to believe. And I don't know, maybe that's just a matter of personality differences. Maybe it's a lack of a Chris Carpenter to inspire that competitive intensity in them. And maybe it's just a matter of guys that are nice enough, but they're not really the unit that they need to be to play at a high level day in and day out, because they care as much about the guy next to them succeeding as they do about themselves.
Yeah, Holly, Laura, I know you kind of referenced maybe, you know, people talking a lot about clubhouse chemistry versus other issues in your last podcast. But, I mean, what are your thinking on this?
Well, I think that in addition to everything that's already been said, I guess I could say we could blame some of this on letting Matt Holliday go as well, because I think that there is a lack of leadership in the clubhouse, like that one leader, like a Lance Berkman type, a Matt Holliday type, those guys who've been around for so long, and all of the younger guys look up to them and respect them so much on the field and off the field. And I think that when Matt Holliday left, you had guys like Adam Wainwright who tried really hard to step into that role. I mean, thinking about spring training and some of the different team exercises they tried to go through to increase that sense of chemistry in the clubhouse. And I think that during spring training, we saw more evidence of that. But then when the actual season started, I think some of that started to dissipate. And I don't know if there's a very clear leader in that clubhouse right now. So unless someone steps up and takes that spot, I think it's going to be very difficult going into the second half, trying to get it together.
And I am much more on the side of Kevin, probably more extreme, though, because I don't care about chemistry. I don't care about fun. I care about winning. And these guys are an adult. They're being paid millions of dollars. I don't care about your stupid ping pong clubs. I don't care if you're going to work every day, all these little cliques and stuff. This isn't junior high. They need to grow up and do their job. And I think part of it is that they've become such celebrities, and I think social media has provided such a platform for their social media that it's almost like they've become celebrities first and players second in some ways, and they're focusing on side projects a lot. A lot of these guys seem to be much more interested promoting their new clothing lines or promoting their charities, which is great, but, you know, better to do that when you're in the off season or something. They're not focused on winning, and I don't really care. I never got on the train with Bryce Harper for anything, but especially not his make baseball fun again. No, make baseball winning again, and just the Cardinals, just win and stop focusing on everything else.
You know, it's ironic because I think the point that Derek Gould and I think the Reds writer made was that Bryce Harper would be an outstanding fit in St. Louis, and his intensity, his level of play, his Charlie hustle, if you will, and I'm going to get slapped for bringing that up, kind of baseball style. But I think what's great that we're all saying here is the Cardinals lack intensity. And I think, you know, there are a lot of times where I'm a chemistry guy. You know, and what I mean by that is it's not the beginning or the end all, but I think I believe in chemistry and how it can impact a club. But every time you talk about a club that cares about each other, like Tara was talking about, I believe in that. But every time you talk about that, somebody else is going to talk about the 80s Oakland Athletics that hated each other but beat the tar out of baseball clubs. And I think it makes me think I love the distinction that Tara made between just a bunch of nice guys in the clubhouse and guys who care about each other. Because I think what we're saying here is that intensity comes from one of two places. In a really special team, it comes from both at the same time. But really, it comes from one of two places. It's either a bunch of guys that care about each other and are intense about pulling in the same direction and winning for the guy next to them, and that's great and that works. Or it's a bunch of guys who are just intense, like the 80s Athletics, who just play ball hard and win and dominate, and they just want to beat the guy in front of them, and they don't care about the guy next to him as long as he's going along with them to beat the guy in front of them. And either one of those works, and it's really special when you have a club like maybe the 2004 club that maybe blended that together. But I think what you've got this year is a club that doesn't have either one, and you've got a bunch of nice guys who get along well on the playground, but when push comes to shove, somebody's going and telling the teacher. And instead of this is my ball and I'm going to play the ball game and I'm going to win and get out of my way. And I think they need a different kind of atmosphere. They need a shake up and they need an intense one, no matter where it comes from.
Yeah, I think that there's I totally understand the argument that just kind of wants to put chemistry to the side, because I think you're right. You know, they're being paid to do a job and they should be able to do their job whether they like their coworkers or not. But I think that having been in a work atmosphere where I didn't like my coworkers, it's a lot harder to do your job well when your success depends on the person next to you and you do not like them. It's one thing to care about them as a person because you get along really well and you invite their family over for dinner and you get together in the off season and whatever. That's great. And that can absolutely work. I think that's more the 2016 Cubs style, we really care about each other thing. But you can also, even if you don't really ever plan on hanging out with these people, Kevin, to your point, you can care about the person next to you because your success depends on them. So you want them to be as good as they can possibly be, because my personal success, because it's a team industry, depends on the guy next to me being as good as he can possibly be. So I think that there's definitely a balance. I think there can be too much made of whether or not guys are getting along in the clubhouse, because that's only part of the story. But I also think that it's really difficult, especially as much time as these guys spend together, if there is a problem or if there are guys who are making it difficult for everyone else, or quite honestly, in a personal work situation this weekend, if there's someone on your team that doesn't care to do their job well, it is infuriating, and it affects every other part of the job being done. So I understand the argument, and you may be totally right. But from my perspective, I can see where it's important to have some level of caring about the other guys on the team, because it's going to create an environment where you can all be successful.
Quick correction, Kevin. That's the 70 Yankees I think you're talking about, or the 70 A's that you're talking about, because they hated each other, but they hated Chuck Finley more, or Charles Finley, the owner, more. The 80s Athletics had their own issues that we found out later on about.
A mutual reason to care, right? That's all they need.
That's right. And some of this is also, you know, winning solves everything. I mean, you can also remember back when Tony La Russa was here, and in some of those years that, you know, when Tony was struggling, you know, even at the end of his tenure, because 09, you know, they go out early, 10, they don't make the playoffs. And everybody thought that everybody was too stiff, everybody was working too hard, and that was, you know, was all too focused, and that's why they weren't winning, of course. And Tony loosened up in 11, and that's why everything worked. And so some of that is narrative, but some of it is true. I think that there is, as all of you have pointed out, you know, there needs to be a bit different focus. There needs to be something. And yes, you want to enjoy going to work, but you should enjoy winning. And that, you know, if you're winning, right, you're going to enjoy going to work. And I can't imagine, no matter how fun Dexter Fowler is and how many games of ping pong Jerko plays and all that kind of stuff, that they're having a whole lot of fun right now. If they are 7 games under .500 after, you know, or 8 games or wherever they're at now, then I think they need to take a look in the mirror and say, why aren't we playing ball? So, again, I think that's something, and this is, I mean, clubhouse stuff is all that stuff that you find out 10 or 15 years from now, or at least at the end of the season, when maybe some people come out with, stories, especially when it's not a successful season. But, it's hard to know just how much that really plays into it. All right, let's be a little bit positive. I mean, we ought to, you know, we've only been doing this for what, half an hour now or so, and I don't think we said one positive. Yeah. So let's talk. Kevin, we'll start with you. Who has been your first half MVP? And I have a feeling we're going to wind up with a lot of similar answers instead of repeating, you know, not repeating anybody like we did last time around. But Kevin, who's your first half MVP?
Well, I mean, I'm in wholehearted agreement with Tara on Colton Wong's season, and it would be him if he wasn't injured. He's really taken great strides this year, and I think we're going to see a lot of Colton Wong in the future of the Cardinals, and that's not something that we could say for a certainty even as recent as last year. But he's really been their most consistent player, their best player. He's been the spark of the offense. He's been the spark of the defense at times. But I think for me, it could be Tommy Pham. And I'm probably like trying to disqualify everybody's answers unintentionally here, so I apologize in advance. But hopefully I'm just giving you material. But it could be Tommy Pham, but the Pham for me hasn't really been with this club long enough. For me, it's Jed Jerko. And I know there's going to be a lot of people that would come back and say, yeah, but his home runs are solo shots. They lead off an inning. Maybe they're meaningless home runs. I don't know. But for me, the only guy that's looked like a Major League Baseball player at a high level consistently has been Jed Jerko. Yeah, he's had some slumps. He's had some down times, but he certainly surpassed my expectations. I was to the point where I felt like he wasn't being given a starting job, and I said this several times, because the organization saw something. I mean, normally when we see something in a bench guy like Jerko, who pops 30 home runs and leads a team in power and then doesn't get a starting job the next year, usually the organization knows something we don't about a hole in his swing or some kind of latent problem that's going to come out with 500 bats at bats in a season in regular duty. But that hasn't been the case this year for too long a stretch. And Jerko has really only been the only guy that we could point to and say, yeah, he's kind of been a potent bat in the lineup, and nobody else has been.
Tara, what do you think?
Well, since I did sort of promise to buy a Tommy Pham jersey if he gets the Cardinals into the playoffs, I kind of feel like I need to go with Tommy Pham. But no, I think that I agree. He's been a great spark, but I think that we're still kind of waiting to see if this is the real Tommy Pham. So for me, it's Carlos Martinez. I think in a rotation, and I know he had a couple of rough starts in a row, but he worked it out and he figured out how to make it better. And he's just such an exciting player. And I think that if the Cardinals were better as a whole, he would be getting much more national attention. But in a rotation that has taken its lumps lately, Carlos seems to be the one guy that you pretty much know what you're going to get from him every 5 days. And that's not an easy task. And we've talked the last season or so about whether or not he could be or would be the team's ace. I think what we've seen from him this year is that he has every possibility and every capability of doing that. So Carlos Martinez has been the one constantly enjoyable part of the first half for the Cardinals for me.
Holly and Laura?
Exactly what Tara said, and I don't have too much to add. It's just Carlos Martinez has been the one guy that we had high expectations going in on, and he's met those expectations. I don't really think there's been some surprises. Jed Jerko, I think, was a surprise. I don't think I had very high expectations for him this year, but Martinez fulfilled everything that we were hoping for.
And I have to jump on the same bandwagon. And I don't know if he would have been my first pick if the team overall had been just better than average or below average. But yeah, I think he's grown up so much the past few years. You can see that steady progression. And I think this year has reflected that the most so far to date. And I just wish there was more of a pool to draw from than just like Carlos Martinez or Tommy Pham or Jed Jerko. And I do have to throw this out there. Matt Carpenter, I know he's getting a bad rap this season, but at the same time, his on-base percentage has been, I believe it still leads the team right now as far as guys who are out there pretty much every day. And that's one of my favorite stats. I love to see that because he's still getting on base one way or the other. And when it comes down to it, that's what you need. That's what you need the most to win games. So I'll throw that out there, even though he's not MVP for me.
All right, Alan, you got a different name. You're going to go along with Carlos.
Well, yeah, I was going to go with Martinez. I was going to also say that Jerko is their best offensive player. I felt like he's been the best offensive player from the first half. But Martinez, and I even kind of thought about maybe throwing Leak in there a little bit, because Leak was kind of must-see television up until the Cincinnati start. You know, he looked really good. But I think we're seeing a superstar develop in Martinez. I mean, his career arc follows some pretty big names, and it's one of those to where I know that everybody on this call probably watches every night anyway, so it's not, but your middle of the road fan is going to have a hard time missing Martinez starts. I think he's something special, and I mean, if we're talking about something positive, that's really something to build on. You know, that's you can turn it around really quick when you have a true ace.
Yeah, obviously I would go with that, although we might want to give consideration to either Carlos Martinez's barber or whoever convinced him to get rid of the extensions, because obviously
those are so terrible. That's I'm also 40 and bald, so it's easy for me to say I'm one of those deals. So.
It's also interesting, given how Twitter goes, and Twitter is, of course, a great barometer of rational thought, that nobody picked Mag Sierra as their MVP. Just because that's everybody.
Sorry, I was still laughing at the first part about Twitter.
But there's no doubt that Sierra gave a little bit of a spark at one time. I mean, you can argue whether he should be here or not, and I don't know that we will. But I think there are some that might give him an MVP just for those few games. I'm not one of them.
He can run the bases without getting thrown out, so that's fun.
Yeah, that's
that happens.
Occasionally,
but only in the minor leagues.
To be fair, he did.
I feel like Sierra is just trolling the Cardinals major league roster when he steals home without getting thrown out.
Yeah,
it's like, how hard is this? While I have the mic for a second, since you all overwhelmingly agreed, I love Carlos Martinez, but I have to make one counterpoint, and that is Martinez has pitched in 15 games. He's had an opportunity to impact 15 games this season. The Cardinals have won 8 of them. And in 6 of them, the offense has scored 4 runs or more, most of those games more, way more than 4 runs to win the game. For me, I love Carlos Martinez. He's a superstar. He might be the only superstar this team has left. But most valuable player, I can't see it, just because he doesn't have enough opportunities to impact the game.
He also pitched 9 shutout innings and didn't get a win or a loss. Thanks, Matt Carpenter.
not holding on to that at all, are you, Tara?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Might have been the best start of Carlos Martinez's career, but no big deal.
Not at all. So, anyway. That's the typical pitcher versus hitter response, and that's fair argument. The flip side of that is typically when you see in the Cy Young MVP voting is, you know, a pitcher faces X number of batters versus which gets pretty close to the number of at-bats that you're going to see. But you're right, a player can affect every game, not just every fifth day.
Did you hear that, guys? Daniel said the words, "You're right."
I said that part was right.
I heard it.
Yes.
I heard it. No, you didn't say it. You said, "You're right." That's all I heard.
And we've gone completely off the rails.
Yeah, that's...
Man,
I had more questions.
It was inevitable at some point.
I'm thinking we might have to just shut it down now. If that's gonna be the case. All right. Well, Tara, we'll toss this question to you. And it's, we are at the All-Star break. It has been a difficult year. Obviously, the Cardinals get one representative this year. If there was a line of 1.5 for Cardinal All-Stars, would you take the under? Would you take the one? Or do you think they can get more than one player there?
I think Carlos Martinez is obviously the one. But if Tommy Pham had been at the major league level for more of the first half, I think he would be a pretty convincing second choice. I think if the Cardinals were better on the whole, Jed Jerko would be getting a little bit more attention than he is. But since they're not, and since Tommy Pham has not, I have a feeling it's Carlos Martinez is going to be flying solo to the All-Star game.
Holly and Laura, do you feel the same?
Yeah, it's not looking good. I looked up the projections and, not looking too favorable, but you have to ask yourself who really cares anymore. I mean, the
yeah. yeah.
This is the Fair road point. That led us down the World Series home field advantage rule, okay? So we got to be careful.
Oh, man.
Well, and I think the thing is with St. Louisans in particular, we kind of picked this up, that they're going to vote for someone if they think they've deserved it. I mean, they're not necessarily just going to stuff the ballot box like we've seen in past years in other cities. So I think that if they believe it's deserved, they'll vote for them. And if not, they'll just wait till next year and see what happens.
Yeah, it does not look like it's going to be any kind of voting push to get them in. It's definitely going to be managers and players and such. Alan, do the managers and the players put anybody else in besides Carlos?
No, I don't think so. You know what could be really telling about the Cardinals, just throw this out there. How many of the guys would rather have that full week off than go to the game? I'd be willing to bet it's probably the majority of that roster.
Everyone that but Carlos Martinez and Tommy Pham.
Yeah. I think Matt Carpenter already has a beach vacation booked.
Well, oh, I'm sure. I mean, the All-Star game is in Miami, so he wouldn't have to go very far. Kevin, I mean, does anybody else make it?
You know, I'm going to agree with everybody. I think Carlos Martinez is the only guy. I think this is one of those years where the Cardinals are going to end up being that team where everyone says, man, they probably only get an All-Star because Major League Baseball says they have to. Yeah, Martinez is deserving, but it's just as likely that the Cardinals convince their only viable starter. I mean, yeah, Mike Leake is there, but I don't know how much longer I expect that to continue, to take the week off and say, look, just rest your arm. You're still young. You're an asset. You might be the only asset that we have left. I will say this, some value that I think that Jed Jerko has in I think 1.5 is a great mark to put this line at, because I think some value that Jed Jerko has is his versatility. And I think when it comes to manager-selected choices, when you get all the guys that start dropping out for injuries and time off and whatever, I think Jerko's a guy that can play every single infield position, not all of them real well, but every single infield position. And he's also even played left field. So I think you've got a guy that's offensively talented, defensively versatile, and I think there are managers that value that in an All-Star game that holds a lot of unknowns. So I think Jerko's got an outside chance to be named as that late-inning versatile guy. You saw Matt Carpenter get that at one point. But I think if I had to put my money down on one spot, I'm going to take the under, and I'm going to say Carlos Martinez is the only guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you're right. Again, I'm going to say it again because it's, I don't know. Apparently hit my head.
Mark it
but,
down.
He does this podcast, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
Just to hear you say that. Said that to me.
Yeah, you know, that's why I spent 4 hours with Skype today, just so I'd hear that. So,
that is the best line of the day, right there. And accurate.
I think that you know, Jerko is that option of, you know, he's kind of far down the line. It's one of those guys that when they make out their initial roster, he's probably not going to make it. But when it comes down to, you know, it actually 40 people or so get to be an All-Star because of injuries or things of that nature, he might squeeze in there, especially if he has a good next couple of weeks before the selections are made. So be something.
You could also see the Cardinals lobby for this a little bit, because one of the guys that I think they need to move is Jed Jerko when they're out of it. And I think, man, an All-Star selection really ups his trade value. No, it doesn't. But conceptually, it could.
I love that you just shot down your own argument.
I'm just saying, no GM's going, well, he was an All-Star, so I guess I'll throw in this extra top 100 prospect.
All right, we got a question on that later on. We'll get to that in a minute. But Holly and Laura, let's go ahead and talk about what the rest of the season is. You know, what's the most important thing that has to happen in the second half if the Cardinals are going to be better? And I'm not even saying, I mean, if they want to make a run at 500, let's say, what's the one thing that has to happen?
I mean, I'm tempted to go back to the bullpen again just because it's been so miserable. And I wonder if Mo is just going to have to pull one of those crazy trades again. I mean, going back to maybe an Alan Craig, Joe Kelly mix up, just something that's almost so shocking and that no one really expected, that it turns the clubhouse upside down on its head, and they just kind of have to start from scratch. And I mean, we've seen that become effective in the past, so I could see that theoretically working, especially if it involves the bullpen. So I'm going to go with that.
Can I say an act of God? I mean, I don't know. I would say the bullpen too, if I'm limited to not a miracle. I'm not feeling too enthusiastic. But maybe it was just watching Lance Lynn lose today. That always hurts me deeply. But yeah, I I guess I'd go with the bullpen.
Okay, Alan, if we stay in the non-divine realm of things, what's your pick? What has to improve?
This podcast is awesome.
I think that they've got to get the farm system involved. I think you've got to get some Weaver starts, because I just don't know what else I don't know what else he has to prove in Memphis. I think you have to have Flaherty come up, and I think that he's going to take that. He's on the same path that Weaver was last year, to where he was kind of second. Weaver was second fiddle to Reyes, comes up, pitches well, you know, kind of ran out of steam after the minor league season ended, you know, one of those things. I think that you need to do that, and in doing that, I think you can also shape the bullpen a little bit. Mozeliak will make a bullpen move whether they're buying or selling. He does it every year. He'll get something. It may even be after, maybe through waivers, after August 1st. That would seem to me to be too late, so I would think it would be sooner rather than later. But I think he'll revamp the pitching constantly. And like Kevin said earlier, there's reinforcements ready. I mean, we shouldn't be seeing these guys get beat around like they do. You're going to have the tough decision with Waka. That's been mapped out. The toughest decision they're going to have to make as an organization outside of when Kelly's truly ready with Yachty is going to be Wainwright. I'm really curious to see how they're going to handle that, because that's going to be a tough one for management to have to make. Lynn, I'm still convinced, is going to get traded, whatever path they decide to do. The compensation pick just isn't worth it anymore. You know, that got shot down in this last CBA, so I know that the counterpoint on this is going to be they're going to need draft picks anyway, since they've lost them in the hacking scandal. I just don't think it's worth it, and I think that you can get value back quickly. So I think there's going to be spots in the rotation. I think Gonzalez, I think Gant, and maybe, you know, Alcantara, any of those guys. I know that Mozeliak had mentioned that he's not missing as many bats as they would hope. Sometimes those guys throw 100, get up, come up late, and still strike out big league hitters just because it's 100 miles an hour. So I think they can revamp that pitching, and there's still a little bit of hope. They're losing it quickly, but the division's terrible. I listened to Mozeliak and DeWitt this week about on MLB Radio and then one on 590, and both of them, to me, sounded like they don't think the Cubs have what it takes right now to run away with it. So I think they're going to be in play. I think they're going to sell Lynn, maybe Rosenthal, because I think you can get so much back, but I think that pitching's going to be revamped before it's all said and done.
All right, Kevin, what do you think? What has to be fixed? What has to improve for this team to at least look presentable?
You know, there's so many areas. I just sounded like Donald Trump there. There's so much we're gonna do. It's gonna be huge. So I can agree with every answer that's been given today. I think a great answer is Allen's with getting the farm system involved. I think for the Cardinals to improve, you're going to have to see guys like Flaherty, Weaver make starts. You're going to have to see guys like Luke Voit take some at bats. But I think for me, I'm going to pull a Tara here and go in a little bit different direction with this question. And I think the biggest and best thing that could happen for the Cardinals to improve is to acquire a big bat. And we all say that. We all know that. We all know we need a thumper. We need a feature bat in this lineup. But I think the reason I say that is also for a little bit different reason than just the offensive impact. This team needs a lightning rod. Mm-hmm. This team needs a personality, a name, a bat to take the attention and suck it all up and fill that space so that the rest of the team can start going about their business, so that the manager isn't the biggest name in St. Louis anymore, whether that's positive or negative. They need a bat to sit squarely in the middle of that lineup and say, look at me, I'm the guy, everybody eyes on me. And then you could bring guys up like Flaherty, Weaver, Voit, or whoever, Patrick Wisdom, Harrison Bader, whoever you're going to bring up to impact this roster. And you've got that lightning rod to take all the attention off the team or as much as possible, and you know they can handle it. And then I think maybe you begin to see this team improve. And I think that is the biggest and best thing. But I think Allen's answer is a great one, and that's how I think. I made the point earlier on Twitter that I think this team could actually win more games by surrendering and trading some pieces, because they're going to have to trade from the major league roster And you're going to have to backfill that with guys from the minor league teams. And when that happens, I think a lot of the improvement the club has been looking for is going to begin to happen just through surrender.
Yeah, and that's, you know, my buddies were asking me a bunch of questions about that. And I said, hey, their best chance right now may be addition by subtraction and just maybe switch some things up. So I completely agree with that. You know, Mozeliak and Matheny both said that they feel like they're starting pitching. They have enough now and in the system to compete in this division, which is kind of a clue to me that that's probably the route they're going to go. I just wish they would pull the trigger to do it.
Tara, if you had to pick, what's the one thing? Maybe it's Matt Carpenter's base running. I don't know, but what's the one thing that you would say has to improve?
Well, base running in general is definitely got to be on the list somewhere. But, you know, that is just a piece of a much broader problem. And I think that is just the fundamentals, whether it's situational hitting or base running or knowing where to throw to the cutoff man. You know, just and we all laugh because they seem like such elementary issues, but I think that all of those things are really the centerpiece of what's making this team such a problem. Is it that whatever is going on whatever level it is, it's got them all in such a mess mentally that they can't even play the game that they've been playing for most of their lives. The game hasn't changed. The game is the same as it was when they were playing minor league ball. You know, I just watched a bunch of minor league baseball players the other night, and it's the same game. It's the same fundamentals. It's the same decisions that have to be made. It's the same basics as far as the skills are concerned. And I don't know how you improve that in one fell swoop. I think that a big bat is, like Kevin said, not only good for the lineup, but good for the organizational focus. I think that overhauling the pitching from the bullpen all the way through the rotation is a good way to try to right the ship. We've seen a lot of teams, including Cardinals teams, that were incredibly successful without a potent bat in the middle of the lineup because of the strength of their pitching. But I feel like the problem, the thing that needs to be fixed with this team is so much more fundamental than that. Because if you take one guy, or even two guys, I think that the point that was made about potentially addition by subtraction for this group is absolutely true in my mind. But I think that points to a much bigger problem, and that is how this team is being maybe forced together to begin with. So from the fundamentals to the personnel to the pitching, I almost feel like the way this team will improve outside of the miracle that I think is probably the best chance is to really, I don't know, it sounds super cheesy, but to do some serious self-evaluation as an organization and figure out what they want this team to be. Because I feel like there's, for years now, been a huge disconnect between the team they say they are and the team that they are on the field. And wherever that disconnect is happening, whether it's between Mo's office and Matheny's office, or between Matheny's office and the guys in the locker room, or whether it's a matter of just not having the right pieces to play the game the way that they would like to, it feels like a square peg in a round hole sort of situation. And I think the way this team is going to improve is to kind of take a step back and almost start over in figuring out who they're going to be and then how can they get there. If that's a big bat, then great. Go out and get it. Stop looking at the price tag. Stop looking at, you know, all the ways that you can't, that you don't want to overvalue someone, and just do it. And if it's not that, then trade off some of your major leaguers and go get the pitching that you need. Just honestly, I think they can improve in a lot of different ways, but they have to pick one. The 4 to 6 week window that was given as far as improving, 4 to 6 weeks in baseball is a really long time. There are a lot of things that happen over the course of 4 to 6 weeks, especially in a division that is so well within reach at this point that, you know, you wait 4 to 6 weeks to do anything when you know the areas that need improvement anyway, and you might just sink your own ship at that point. So that was kind of a long-winded way of saying, for me, there are way too many things to fix all at once, but they have to just pick something and do it.
I have to say, when you said you watched a minor league team, I was really tempted to say, what a coincidence, I watched a minor league team play the Pirates tonight. Well, yeah, I think, you know, there's the follow-up point to that on what Tara's saying, too, is that it almost feels like the Cardinals have been run like you run your fantasy team, you know? Pick the best player on the board and shove him in somewhere. Instead of, all right, we need a big bat third baseman, let's go get one, because this is the kind of team we want to be. It's who's the best player on the roster, who can possibly play third base.
Well, and not only that, but then expecting that guy, no matter who he is or what his skill set is, to play the way that you want your baseball team to play. I think in some degree, Dexter Fowler's kind of in that boat right now. I mean, he may not be... I think the expectations of Fowler were a little bit unreasonable, but at the same time, I think he was a great addition if they were utilizing him or letting him be who Dexter Fowler is. Now, his slow start at the plate certainly didn't help his case, but I think to some degree, he's kind of in that boat where he was the guy that made the most sense for the Cardinals, but you got to let Dex be Dex and not try to, you know, make him fit the mold that you think is the best way for this team to play.
That's a new t-shirt. Let Dex be Dex.
I like it.
There we go. you know, there's so many different things. And in, I guess the good thing is if the Cardinals could improve on just one of those things, they would, I don't think they would make the playoffs, but they might, you know, keep this streak of 500 years going. Tara and I said, I think it was before one of our shows recently, that they just need to stop putting the hitters and the pitchers in the same meeting. Because early in the year, they were, you know, talking to the pitcher saying, don't let them score any runs. And the offense said, we don't want to score any runs. Okay. And nowadays, it's the other way around. The offense is scoring runs, and the pitchers say, oh, we're supposed to allow runs? We didn't know that. If they could ever, you know, separate the two and do something, you know, a little bit more traditional, as in, you know, the pitcher stop letting people score and the hitters continue to score, the things would be much better. I do think the offense has looked a lot better as of late, overall. So I guess if I was fixing one thing, I would, you know, if we could get Michael Wacha to go 5 or 6 innings without it looking just terrible. You know, if Adam Wainwright could, you know, pitch a little bit more like he does on at home on the road. You know, if Lance Lynn didn't want to be a Cardinal so bad and so would pitch like a contender would want him. You put all that together and maybe you could do something, but that's a whole lot of ifs. And that's, you know, probably not the way this season is going to go.
I just keep picturing Adam Wainwright getting the starting pitchers together and saying, all right, guys, Mike says we need to allow more runs, so we're going to allow more runs. Maybe that's why he's hitting well and not pitching well. He's just confused all year.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, they're in the same meeting, and they don't know how to differentiate the instructions.
Yeah, hits are good. No, they're not. Let's talk.
More home runs. No, not those home runs.
Make up your mind.
It's that lack of direction, you know, they're getting. It's all the confusion.
Communication, so. Man.
Yeah.
That's what I would change, is the communication.
That might be the best thing. All right, Alan. We're getting to that point. We are, you know, I know 4 to 6 weeks was Mo's way of basically saying up to the All-Star break, but right after that is the trading deadline. We kind of expect, I think we would expect Lance Lynn, maybe Sung Wando, just because they're free agents at the end of the year, to at least be options to be moved. Besides them, I mean, is there anybody that you would move that maybe isn't one of the more expected people to be moved?
I don't know. I throw the name out here all the time just because I think he would get the best return is Rosenthal. I don't know if Yadier has played into Kelly being untouchable, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, because I think they see, now we can kind of see the end of the road on that, probably sooner rather than later. Rosenthal would be the big one for me. As far as unexpected, I don't know what anybody else would want. I think Jericho would bring quite a bit back right now. And, of course, Carr may be your best best trade chip, but I just don't see that happening. I think they see him as a they see him as different than what everybody else has seen on this call. I don't know. I think that your most return would be Rosenthal or Reyes, and I would think Reyes and Martinez are probably the closest thing to untouchable that they've got.
Yeah, I would think that there might be a few torches if either one of those got traded. Kevin, what do you think? I mean, is there somebody that they can move that would at least, if nothing else, surprise us and shock some people?
I don't know about surprise and shock. I think everybody has kind of kicked around the idea of trading every player on the roster at some point this season. I think a lot of it comes down to what the front office has in mind, right? I mean, if they're looking to completely remake the club and acknowledge some issues, you know, Ortiz of the Post-Dispatch made a great point, one of his few ones, that Matt Carpenter is probably the biggest defensive handcuff on this team, right? Yeah. I mean, it's you're talking about every time you talk about ways to make the team better, you always run into the same wall, and that is, well, but then I got to move Carpenter. I think if they're looking at it and saying, look, we need to accept some realities, we need to remake the roster a certain way, let's move on from the Matt Carpenter experience, then I think you see Carpenter traded. I think he can get a lot of value. On the other hand, I think Carpenter's a guy you can kind of stick in a corner and say, look, dude, just get on base and hit, and nobody's going to look your direction. We're going to get that lightning rod bat, and we're going to take the pressure off of you. We're going to take the attention off of you. And then I think he shines, which is kind of what he's good at. Where you play him is a different discussion for another day. And I think you got guys like O. I think with O, he's not going to have as much trade value as we all hoped he would. Probably coming up, not that we all wanted to trade him, but I think he's not going to have as much value as he probably should have had at this point in the season. So I could see them actually holding on to O and saying, you know what, if he's going to have this kind of season, he's going to become a guy in our bullpen at some point in time. Lance Lynn, with the way his starts have gone recently, I think you trade Lynn either way. I think if you're in it or you're not in it, you trade Lynn. I think you get a couple, maybe one, maybe two good starts and say, see, he's still good, gimme. And then you get whatever you can get at the highest possible value for Lance Lynn, and you move on. Because you've got guys like Flaherty in the system who can come up. You have guys like Weaver that you need to find starts for. And I think you're a better team for it going down the road. For me, the guy that wasn't in your initial question that you sent out, see, I read it, was what Alan already says, Jed Jerko. I think you talk to a lot of guys and they say, oh, but how can we trade Jerko? You just said he's the MVP of the season. Yeah, he's probably the best bat on the team right now, or has been consistently throughout the year, but this is also probably Jerko's peak value in his career. I don't think you're going to see Jed Jerko do this for the next 5 to 10 years. I don't think you're going to see him do this for the next 2 or 3 years. I think Jed Jerko, with where he's at right now, we were just talking about Jed Jerko as a potential all-star. And I think in that scenario, when you look at it just as an asset who has value and has a certain value at one point in the year and another value at another point in the year, I think it only makes sense for Jed Jerko to get traded at this point in time because his asset value is high. And I think the Cardinals have never really seen him as a future piece. They've always seen him as somebody who's either going to be a utility player or somebody they're going to move on from. And I think they've always targeted the position he's playing now as a position they could acquire a core player at. So I think for me, the other guy that's not on your list initially that needs to go is probably Jed Jerko, not because I don't like him and not because he's not valuable to this team, but because as an asset, his highest level of value, I think, is right now.
Tara, where do you land? Is that the case? Do we need to move Jerko or do somebody else?
I think all of those are really interesting possibilities. As far as the likelihood of them, I'm a little bit cynical on the way that John Mozeliak values his own players as far as, or as compared to the way the rest of the market does. But I'll tell you what, if Tommy Pham keeps swinging a hot bat and keeps making comments like he has the last week, he's gone.
Yes, I said the same thing on the last Mutual. I said, Pham may have spoken his way out of town.
I mean, I love it. I love that he's... I think they need that kind of personality, but I don't think that it's typically the kind of personality as far as publicly that is... well received, shall we say, by the powers that be in the organization.
Holly and Laura, where are you coming down on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty much all been said. I could definitely see Lance Lynn, Rosie probably going top out of all those guys. I would be a little more surprised if they got rid of O. I'm not sure all the bylaws or whatever that's associated with international signings, but and I would hate to see Lance Lynn go. I think he's been a really nice pillar here in St. Louis for a number of years now, as young as he is. But I would say out of all those guys, Lynn and Rosie, and then I kind of wonder if they would try to throw Randall Grichuk into the mix. I mean, his trade value is not going to be very high right now, but people do know what he's capable of doing, so that wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, I kept thinking, of course, that I thought the Cardinals were going to be good, that Harrison Bader would be the one that would go out of town as the Cardinals tried to bring something in to contend. But if they want to put Bader up, you're right, they've got to find some spot for him, and maybe that is Tommy Pham selling him at the high that he's got and hope he doesn't get hurt between now and then. I don't know. Might be an interesting way to think about it. And Jerko, I think, also brings back a lot of possibility for a contender that needs a bat. I'd hate to see them trade both O and Rosenthal because I don't know what you do in the late innings with both of them gone. But then again, if you're writing off this season anyway, what does it matter? You know, we'll just see how spectacularly we could fail, you know.
Can I throw a name out?
Sure.
Tommy Pham.
Nope. Waka. I bet that's going to be something that gets considered at some point this season.
Yeah, it's possible, although, again, it's difficult to market Michael Walker as a major league starter right now. It's just very difficult to do that. And
you mean Michael Walker for a trade, or Michael Walker as the closer?
As a bullpen piece, late inning guy.
Gotcha.
I don't think they're going to give up on that. He was, he's throwing 97, and he's very good through one time through the lineup. I think they're going to try to reinvent him.
And that would be fascinating because it's easier to have that, you know, as we heard Mo talk about at Blogger Day, you know, he didn't want to have that conversation of moving him to the bullpen because of the financial ramifications. But if you can say, hey, you're going to be a closer, you know, that alleviates a lot of that.
Exactly. That's what I thought as well. In that conversation, he brought up Seager's arbitration figure. Mm-hmm. And when he was talking about that, he said, well, you see what he got, you know, even throwing high leverage innings. So you could sell them on, hey, we're going to try to bring you along. If these guys move, you're going to get all the save opportunities and, you know, may bring up your value.
There's also the possibility that Walker's fastball changeup combo plays better as a closer and he can focus and become a two-pitch pitcher again. Sorry, Tara.
That's fine. I was just going to jump on to the end of what Alan was saying, and I think Daniel and I talked about this last week that, you know, it's great to say that we want to make sure that Michael Walker understands where we're at and that we're not trying to hurt his career financially. If he can't get through five innings, he's hurting his career financially. So
that's
it would
great,
be better
yeah,
for him to it would be better for him to do something and, like you said, reinvent himself in some fashion. And if that's as a closer, great. If it's as a guy that can go an inning and a half, two innings, then that's great. But I think that conversation gets a lot easier if you recognize that this is a guy who's struggling to get through five innings without giving up, you know, four, five, six, seven runs. That's not going to get him a large contract as a starter. So he's got to figure out some other way to do that, too.
Yeah,
not to like dive too far off the deep end there.
Yeah, I know. I feel bad.
I will say that I think the only thing the only question is if Walker can go on back-to-back days and right. things of that nature because of the stress reaction. If not, it's if that's not an issue, then it seems very likely to me. I mean, very very reasonable to me. It does feel that Rosenthal to the Nationals makes a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Like the best option for the Cardinals to get actual prospects into this organization. I don't know that they'll do that, but you know, with Rosenthal having another year of control and a Nationals bullpen that's, you know, pretty miserable, even more so than St. Louis's, and a team in Washington that expects to contend, expects to win a World Series, a guy like Rosenthal would make a lot of sense. But anyway, we have to see what John Mozeliak is going to want to do, because, you know, I kind of looked over his history over the off season, and you know, wild and crazy jumps into the trade market are not exactly his MO, to use the pun. that's not what he does. I mean, this is the kind of time where he's expecting to take a outfield prospect and trade it for a bullpen arm, and that's just not going to work this year. So we'll see what he has to do. All right, let's wrap this part of it up, and I have one more question after this, but this will wrap up our discussion about the Cardinals. And we'll start with you, Kevin. What's your expectation for the second half? What do you think this team does? You know, can they get over to the 500, or do they just continue to spiral?
Well, you're gonna hate me for this, but I'm gonna make one follow up point and throw one more name out there that'll probably get everybody throwing something at me. I'm John Mozeliak, and everybody is in agreement that this is not the year, and they're going to surrender, and they're going to have a fire sale, I would float Mike Leake if he has an outstanding string of starts between now and the trade deadline, simply because if he can build his perceived value up to a certain point, there's an argument to be made that he has greater value to the organization as a trade chip than he does as the pitcher they signed him to be, which was to be an innings eater, 3 or 4 starter. And if he continues to have a dominant season between now and the trade deadline, I would at least float his name and see what somebody's willing to throw at you.
Of course,
not nearly as unreasonable as I expected.
Yeah, the only problem is, of course, that John Mozeliak gave him a no-trade clause, and not that that's going to necessarily stop things, but it does.
I would wave that so fast to get out of St. Louis right now.
Yeah.
Okay, to move on with your question.
Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
So what kind of second half they're going to have? I expect what Alan said originally to come to pass. I think you're going to see a whole lot of guys, comparatively speaking. I mean, you're not going to see 10 guys come up, but I think you're going to see a lot of guys from AAA come up and get I feel like somebody's transcribing what I'm saying. I hear typing.
That's me. Sorry.
No, you're good. I just kind of felt like I was important for a second. Doesn't happen to me very often.
No.
Wanted to be able to quote you directly later.
Exactly. That's what
this is how badly wrong Kevin was.
This dude said. So anyway, I think you're going to see the farm system play a big role, and I think, based on where this team is coming from, I think things can only look up for the Cardinals when that happens. I think you've got a lot of guys that are going to deserve a shot that maybe you wouldn't see until the September call-ups, that maybe you're going to see in starting in mid to late July, but maybe August and September this year. I think you're going to see a lot of guys that are going to make this team look younger, more athletic, more intense, and you're going to get to see a glimpse of the future, and that could actually result in more wins for this team.
Tara, what do you think?
I think that Colton Wong and Tommy Pham carry this team to the playoffs. No, I'm just kidding. I have no expectations for the second half at this point, honestly. I think that it's fun to talk about the ways that John Mozeliak can go out and make moves to improve this team. I think it's exciting to think about some of the young talent getting a chance to have major league experience before the team is depending on them to succeed. I quite honestly don't know what a reasonable expectation is of either of those two things at this point. I think, you know, I threw it out there on Twitter last night and conveniently haven't had a chance to be on Twitter today but to see the dumpster fire. But, no, you know, I was just kind of wondering aloud via Twitter that, you know, there were a lot of comments made about guys being put on notice with the Maloney and Peralta move. And that's all great, but do we really expect there to be any follow through on that? I'm not sure. You know, it sounds great to say, well, everybody's on notice, everybody's job is at stake, but are you really going to do anything about that if the team doesn't get any better? And I don't know that I see the urgency to do that. So all of that to say, my expectations are pretty low as far as the team being competitive, which is really disappointing in a year where the division is totally winnable. Because I agree, I don't think that the Cubs have everything they thought they had. I don't think the Brewers, I know the Brewers aren't as good as Brewers fans think they are. But you know, it's a division that the Cardinals could swoop in and take in a year where they're not expected to, if they were able to put the right pieces in play. But I don't know that I expect them to go out and get those right pieces. So I would love to see some of the young kids get a chance to gain that experience. So that, you know, maybe we don't see quite the growing pains for some of those guys that we have with Paul DeJong, for example. but that would be, I guess, the most realistic of the expectations for the second half.
Holly and Laura, what are y'all thinking?
I think it's going to depend more on the other teams in our division than it is on us, because I think we're going to play probably pretty much the same that we've seen all season. I hope that we finish a little above 500. But I don't think it's going to be enough for sure, unless the other teams happen to just get even worse than they already are.
Well, I think the other issue you run into, and I can't help myself, I have to throw this out here again because I'm a Matt Holliday fan, but he has had that reputation for a long time of carrying the team in the second half, at least for part of the second half, and he's not here this year, so they can't rely on that. So that's another huge issue that they have to consider.
This is true, and something that, yeah, this whole team needs maybe a little kick. Alan, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd love for there to be a big shakeup trade to put them right in the middle of it, but I just don't see it. If they're going to play 500 or worse, or right around the 500 mark, I'd want it to be with Memphis. That's just kind of how I feel. But as far as expectation goes, I just don't see them doing that. I think they'll see some promotions, but not much, and I think they're probably going to hold pat more than anything, and then see what the off season brings them. So, unfortunately, it could be a boring second half.
Yeah, it very well may be. I'm expecting, of course, Tyler Lyons to become the next big starter, just because of his number. No, I don't. It's so hard. I mean, you'd like to say, okay, this team's going to put something together, and it doesn't feel like, you know, going 7 games over 500 from now to the end of the year should be such a task for a team that should be pretty talented. But, you know, when you watch them, you know, this week, you watch them last week, it's very difficult to believe that they're going to find this extra gear and kick it in and play well. And, yes, I agree. The division's the only thing that's keeping them, you know, interesting, but they're 5 games out now. They're behind everybody but the Reds. They're closer to last than they are to first. You know, the schedule I don't think gets any better for them. You know, that trip, a quick trip to Arizona this week. The Nationals coming up. I mean, it's, they're going to play some good teams. They're going to play some teams that are in the races. It's hard to see that this team does get to that 500 mark. I'm hopeful that they do, and maybe the young guys that they start calling up or whatever injection they can get will help, but it's very difficult to see that happening. Okay, last question has nothing to do with this year, so we can all be positive and happy when we end this thing. as you know, most of you, I think, I don't know about Kevin because he does his own little thing, so I'm not sure. we're going to have a Greatest Cardinal Moments tournament starting in a couple of weeks. Going to be on four different blogs. We're going to have matchups throughout the whole history to kind of celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Cardinals organization. There are a lot of great moments. We're going to talk about your favorite. Tara, why don't you start? What is your favorite Cardinal moment, whether it's big or small? And again, right now, they may be moments that are important to you that may not be as important to overall Cardinal history. However you want to approach it. Tara, start us off.
I think he's probably subtly referring to the fact that I suggested the Pete Cosma infield fly game be included on the list. So when you see that, that was me. Thank you very much. No, but that isn't quite my favorite moment in the entire history of the St. Louis Cardinals, although it's probably top five. It seems very cliche, but as far as my lifetime of Cardinals history, which in the scheme of 125 years is pretty limited, I have a hard time choosing anything but the David Freese Game 6, we will see you tomorrow night. I mean, I know that I feel like almost everyone of my generation is going to pick the same thing, but for me, that was the biggest moment in Cardinals history that I got to experience personally. So every time I hear that, every time I see that, quite honestly, every time I'm at Busch and I walk past what will forever be Freeze Landing to me, that I relive that moment. So I think that's one of the things that baseball provides, is that there's so many moments in a game that you just can't forget where you were and what was happening. And you know, the Chris Carpenter game against the Phillies was another really significant one, but for me, I had to watch that one not live because I was working that night. So if I'd been able to see the Chris Carpenter game live, that one might be a little bit closer to number one. But I just have a hard time choosing anything other than Game 6.
Yeah, I think there is something wrong with my bracket because there's actually two Cosma moments. There just seems to be something completely wrong with that. But anyway, Holly and Laura, what do you want to put as your top moments?
Yeah, well, I think this question would probably be better put to one of those 100-year-old fans who come to the ballpark. I would say they have more experience to draw off of. I missed the first 90-some-odd years, so it's limited. But I think, I mean, you can't top Game 6, and I actually would have to go with the Lance Berkman at-bat. Was my particular favorite. I know it wasn't as exciting as David Freeze's, but because Lance Berkman is probably my all-time favorite Cardinal, and just in that moment, just feeling the huge weight of depression from that game, and then when he had his at-bat, and you just had that extra rush of hope leading up to the final innings, and I really can't move past that moment. That's my particular favorite.
And I think for me, my scope is even more limited because I've always been so bad at history that if I didn't see it, it may as well not have even happened. I have a pretty small pool to draw from. And of course, aside from David Freeze, which I think is probably every St. Louisan's absolute favorite moment, I'm going to have to go with the other obvious, which is Mark McGwire, because I don't care about anything that's happened since. That moment will forever remain completely untainted for me and my, I don't know, 9 or 10-year-old eyes that saw the moment happen. It was just the most magical thing, and that's what got me into baseball in the first place. So.
All right, Alan, where do you go?
Well, I remember 82 a little bit, not too much. I was still fairly young. The Aussie home run in 85 was awesome. The Lawless home run in 87 was pretty awesome in the NLCS. But I'm a prisoner of the moment. But my favorite moment was the Freeze triple. Wasn't the homer. The triple was amazing because his reaction almost makes me cry right now.
That's all.
Yeah, there's a reason we broke up all those in this tournament. So yeah. All three of those moments from Game 6, because if you put, I mean, it's going to be pretty obvious, I think, how this tournament's going to come out anyway. But if you put all of that into one moment, it has there's no chance for any kind of drama at all. I guess
you just need to find more 100-year-old baseball fans, yeah. And then it won't be so obvious.
So many of them are online.
Are not know. On Twitter yeah. or on the
you
internet.
Need to- You see that Bob make up the bracket.
Yeah, well, Bob sent me quite a number of people things on that.
I believe
so
it.
anything you see after, you know, before 1980 has a pretty good chance that it came from Bob on this one. Kevin, you want to weigh in?
You know, I mean, I tried really hard when I saw this question to not be, you know, like the rest of us and pick something that was from my lifetime. I wanted to really go back. I love the story of Stan Musial getting his hit and canceling school the next day on the train. you know, that was just, yeah. I actually came home when I read that and told my daughter, guess what? And I provided a moment for me to tell her about Stan Musial and give her context before I told her. And then he canceled school the next day. But for me, you know, I'll talk about a couple moments first, but these are not my pick. But the Pujols homer off Lidge was
oh, yeah.
legendary. I don't care how the series played out. My stepfather called me the next day laughing and just said, "Hey, Kevin, how about those Cardinals?" You know, and because he knew in that moment that I was just I had lost my mind. And I had never seen anything on a baseball field so powerful as that home run. I mean, it was just – I'm surprised it even qualified as a home run. It looked like something otherworldly. But then to talk about Game 6, I mean, the Lance Berkman at bat, I have to agree with you on how outstanding that was. But for me specifically about how he talked about that at bat afterwards – and he would say, I don't know how many of you heard him tell the story, but he would say, you know, for me, I prayed for God to give me the peace of mind to compete. And he goes into this story about how there was a time when he was playing in Houston and they were playing the Cardinals, and somebody was asking him about, you know, about how he was able to compete so well and win. And he heard Albert Pujols giving the same kind of answer. You know, I just prayed that God would let me get a hit or whatever. And he said, I realized we're both praying for opposite things. Which one is God going to listen to? And so he said, I decided right then and there, I was only going to pray for God to give me the ability to compete in those moments. And just the way he talked about being able to compete in that moment and just being able to stay calm and focused and just be prepared to do the best that he could in that moment was amazing.
That was awesome.
And for me, though, my moment that I would pick, I'm in 100% agreement with Alan. For me, it's the triple, because I hear people talk about the homer and the walk-off, and that was awesome. But for me, the biggest emotional reaction that I had, as far as a positive reaction, I'm pretty sure I said some things that Josh Hamilton heard from here when he hit that home run. but I will even say that my wife liked Josh Hamilton until that moment. That triple was outstanding to me. I can't even describe. I mean, I was probably like the rest of you. I was feasting on my own guts at that moment. I remember on Twitter just going through all the reasons how the Cardinals – I was all bitter, and I was going through all the reasons why the Cardinals gave away the season and all of it. And then all of a sudden he hits that triple, and everything changed. And I could not believe what I was seeing with my own eyes in front of me play out. And when he slid into third base and the game was tied, anything was possible. And I wouldn't even contain that within the realm of baseball. Anything was possible. There was no way that was going to happen, and it did. So for me, when someone asked me, I'll put it this way. When you say Game 6, nobody in St. Louis wonders what you mean. They all know, and mm-hmm. many people outside of St. Louis know. And for me, when you can say that, the most powerful moment to me is the triple that made all that possible.
Yeah, for me, I'm a terrible watcher of the playoffs because I can't handle the stress, especially when they're not winning. So
you did not enjoy Game Six.
I didn't watch. I will admit, I did not watch much of Game Six. They got down, and my wife decided she wanted to watch TV, and I said okay. I kept checking it, and okay, and then how the heck? And did watch the end of it. Watched the last little bit, and I agree. I kind of feel like, you know, after the triple and after Berkman's hit, the Freeze home run was almost like it was destined. It was going to come at some point in time. The Cardinals were going to win that ball game after all that. But probably for me, it does, because I did watch it live, Tara, is the game, the Chris Carpenter game against Roy Halladay. Because I can vividly remember standing on a little square of my carpet in front of the TV, because the kids had gone to bed and it was muted, and I was watching this, and I have my phone, and we're you know, twittering the whole time, and so it was an ability not only to watch probably the best pitched game that I have ever seen, and to see a run given before anybody is out stand up for the rest of the game, but also to share that in a moment, you know, with everybody. On Twitter, in a moment when not everybody was, you know, screaming at each other. That does happen occasionally on Twitter. Not often, but occasionally. I don't know. That's probably where I would put it. Although the McGuire home run race, that whole, if you could put 1998 as a moment, that might be it. Because I could still remember where I was watching, especially a lot of those home runs. You know, the 70 tends to stick with me. So, there's so many great ones. And like you said, I you get back, and if I go ask my dad, you know, what his would be, he probably would probably talk about the game he went to see Stan Musial play late in his career. I mean, it wouldn't be a big moment in Cardinal history, but it might be the one that meant the most to him. And I think there are those personal moments as well that, you know, just being at the ballpark can bring you.
I mean, my very first game at Busch Stadium, I watched Todd Wellemeyer pitch. So maybe that should go on my list.
How did
I
it
just
not?
Talked to a guy? I just talked to a guy at work the other day that, I mean, he's a hockey guy, but he's from St. Louis, and he was telling me a story of growing up on the farm, and one day his dad said, come on, grab your gloves, and he took him into town to the hardware store, and Stan Musial was signing things for whoever walked up to him at the hardware store that day. And he said, you know, stupid us, you know, we went up, we get our gloves signed, and then we go back to the sand lot, and we're like, hey, look what I got, and then you play it, and it all rubs off, you know, I think of you, Daniel, you know, talking about the stress of the postseason. I think it was Rob Neyer, and I'm going to butcher his quote here, but he said it perfectly when he said that, you know, basically watching the postseason, the playoffs in baseball is unlike anything else for a fan, because when your team loses, you feel like you're never going to win again. And when your team wins, you're only glad that they didn't lose. And I thought, that is so perfect a description for a fan's experience of watching a baseball game in the postseason that I just couldn't top that.
It also stands for the 2017 Cardinals. Because I'm pretty sure they're never going to win again at times. So, unfortunately, the way it goes. All right. I am going to wrap this up. We'll go around the horn. And if there's anything you want to talk about before we wrap it that we haven't mentioned, I will give you the floor. Holly and Laura, let's start with y'all. If there's anything you want to say before we end.
No, I've got nothing to add. I think we've picked out enough scabs tonight that I'm feeling kind of depressed about going forward, so I'm done.
Yeah, I think we just have to come to the conclusion right now that there's no specific answer for all of our woes, and we just kind of have to keep our fingers crossed going forward.
All right, Alan, you got anything?
Yeah, please, let's just not ruin our summer. Do something. Bring up Memphis. Please do something. That's all I've got.
All right. Kevin?
You know, the only thing I'll say is kind of what I wrote on today, and that is you know, I think the DeWitts need to be very careful because they've put a lot of money and time and intentionality into developing a winning culture for the Cardinals, and not just at this level, but all the way from the rookie ball all the way up to AAA in the major leagues and into the front office. And what I mean by that is they have gotten people used to winning, and they know that the fan base is used to winning. And they, again, they've talked repeatedly about that tie between winning and attendance. But I think what you're seeing happen now is you're seeing not only apathy from the players, you're seeing apathy from a lot of the fan base. And yeah, we see a lot of the angry fans, but we see a lot of fans that just say, I'm just done. I expect them to lose. I had a fan tell me by direct message on Twitter the other day that they're actively rooting against the Cardinals just so that they'll finally do something to bring in some players with urgency.
Treason. And
what's that?
Treason.
But I think that's the kind of stuff that the Cardinals front office has to be very careful about, and that is that they don't squander this winning culture that they've developed and cast out on that, because I think what you're seeing happen right now is you're seeing what other teams around baseball have experienced before that a lot of Cardinal fans have not experienced for the last 20 years, and that is you're slowly getting a taste of what a losing culture feels like. It doesn't feel – yeah, it feels bad. It's painful. It's negative. It's bitter. But it also feels kind of apathetic. I kind of expect the Cardinals to lose tonight. I kind of expect them to lose tomorrow night. I'll be surprised if they win. And it every day that the DeWitts and Mozeliak and Matheny and everyone that has a say in this lets this go on, I think they put themselves at more and more risk of damaging that culture that they put a lot of time and money and years and effort into developing.
Yeah, and to a different point, you know, Bill DeWitt pointed out they have, I think, 22,000 season ticket holders right now, and so they always know they're going to have a very good base to get to that $3.4 million they want. Another, you know, a year like this, another one like that afterwards, that number's not going to be nearly as high, and so that's going to be something that they'll want to watch. Tara, your final word?
So here's the thing. I said on Bird Seeds a couple weeks ago that I can't not care about baseball. I think all of you in this conversation would agree that it's frustrating and it's hard to watch sometimes, but I can't help myself because of those moments that we all just talked about. So I've come up with a plan listening to all of your comments there. Kevin, you mentioned at the beginning that we needed a bingo card for this podcast. I think we need to come up with a bingo card for watching Cardinals baseball so that we can play it on Twitter together for every game so that it at least stays interesting.
There is a bingo card generator out there online.
See? I mean, I'm telling you, if we want to watch these games and not feel miserable at the end, we got to make it interesting.
But aren't we going to feel miserable if one of the spaces is gotta win, got a series win, and it takes us till September for someone to bingo?
Yeah, but we could just not make that a space.
There you go.
There you go. Well, I will say Cards Cards made up something similar, but I have a feeling it's not nearly as...
Family friendly?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, it was early in the year, and I'm not going to go look it up right now. So anyway, all right. Well, I appreciate all of you joining me and sticking through a couple of hours of this. Again, this is not what we typically the mindset we typically are in when we do this show. And hopefully this is an aberration, and next year when we do it, we'll be a lot happier and a lot more content. But I appreciate Kevin, Holly, Laura, Tara, Alan. I appreciate all of you joining us. Catch them on their shows, catch them on their blogs, and follow them on Twitter. So to end it all up, good night.
Yeah, he plays it calm, but that man is funky. Yeah, but what can I say? I'm a C70 junkie.